This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. I am so fired up for today. We've got Clint Murphy back by popular demand, almost part of the Five Timers Club. Not quite there yet.
He's not there yet, but hopefully there was some discussion of him kind of coming back and talking about this new journey.
His new office is like down the street.
Yeah, so kind of checking in and seeing how it's going because he's now a partner at Frame, a development company that's making big moves on the island.
Yes, we'll talk all about that. But before we get to that, we got to talk about Clint in the capacity of, we talk about how he got to where he is in life. Because Clint was kind of staring down potentially fat fire retirement before he decided to go
look it up
towards Frame.
That's right.
When we talk about it, we unpack
it. Oh yeah, we talk about it on the show.
But also how he got there. This is, in a lot of ways, this is how to find financial freedom at a relatively young age through real estate investing.
And making big moves. Making big moves as well. The other thing about Clint, of course, is he used to say he was the CFO of a development company. He would keep it quiet.
Yes.
Mosaic. He's just finishing up there. We talk about that, what he learned in his decade plus at Mosaic. We talk about the exit strategy and how he planned that. We also talk about, you know, his newsletter. He's huge on Twitter. Growth Guide, his newsletter. He's putting out a lot of content. And I will say, more so than most people I know, he is able to package things in a very compelling way. And he's very smart. So this is such a great kind of like, oh man, that's a smart point. Oh, that's a smart point. Like, take notes.
For sure. For sure. And the struggle with never feeling like you've done enough in life.
Well, there's one thing for sure. Clint is an overachiever.
He's an overachiever. Another thing is you, Matt, you're enough.
Yeah, I'm wildly okay with where I am at. But what else do we have before we cut to our talk with Clint Murphy?
We've got so many exciting things to talk about before we get to our conversation with Clint. We are, of course, sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, which is our real estate company in Vancouver. And we've got a hot new listing that just dropped yesterday.
Yeah, tell me about this one. This one's exciting.
Matt, I am so excited about this new listing. We've got an amazing townhouse in Fairview Slopes. This is a 3-bed, 2-bath, 1,114 square feet. So like a really, really good size for a 3-bedroom townhome. And it's right in the best pocket. It's on the 800 block of 7th Avenue in Fairview. So like walkable to all the best parks.
That's traffic calmed.
It's traffic calmed. You've got the new Broadway subway line right there. I think you're like 2 or 3 blocks away from
VGH.
From the SkyTrain station. VGH. You got all the shopping of the Canby corridor. It's such
close to Granville Island.
Off-leash dog parks. It's amazing. It's incredible.
Does this have outdoor space?
This does have outdoor space.
Oh my God, but it checks all the boxes.
And it's renovated. It's so great. And it's incredible value. It is 1114 square feet. And it's listed at $1.1299.
Sharp price. So head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com to check out that listing as well as our other featured listings right now. And while you're there, you might as well click sell with us. You can download the sold plan. This is start on launch date, our most downloaded PDF of all time.
Yes, all time. And it's an instant download. So you just basically, you sign up, you get the instant download. This is a step-by-step guide to get your home sold for top dollar in the shortest amount of time. It's based on almost 20 years of real estate experience, hundreds and hundreds of homes sold. This is the way to do it. It's over at our site, Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. Click sell with us and download that guide for free right now. And Matt, why don't we cut to our conversation with Clint Murphy,
Absolutely. Who
also used the sold plan.
He used the sold plan.
To set a record. Well, we think it's a record.
Top two for sure. Top two in Mount Pleasant.
Well, enjoy this interview. This one's fantastic. This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly 4 decades. Marcon is not only committed to high quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Clint Murphy. He is a partner at Frame. How you doing?
Good. Great to be here. When I was coming on, my son said, "You've almost got the golden jacket."
It's four so, more episodes.
Oh, no, actually. You only got two more after today.
Yeah,
two
yeah.
More.
He was excited. He was like, he's a big listener.
Well, he'll be excited to hear this. Past guest fan favorite, Clint Murphy, is joining us.
It's just a Century 21 jacket that we take and change the logo. The golden jacket. That's amazing. Thanks for coming back. And we know you're very busy. We follow you. I often think when I get your newsletters, like, how do you do
How on earth are you, writing this? And then I log on to Twitter and see your tweets. And I think, how on earth are you doing
Prolific
this?
Comes to mind. But tell us about yourself and maybe for listeners that haven't heard you on previous episodes.
Absolutely. So for listeners who haven't heard me in the past, we've talked about the fact that I was in real estate and by night I was content creator, podcast host, added a newsletter and write and create on social media. What we'd never actually talked much in detail about was I, for the last 10 and a half years, have been at Mosaic Homes, who I'd be proud to say is one of the best executors at real estate development in the city. And for the last eight of that, I was their CFO. So CFO by day, husband and father by night, and then in random times, content creator and podcast host and newsletter writer.
And writer.
And real estate investor.
And real estate investor.
I think I would add that too. So for the last 14 years, real estate, or 15 years, real estate has been a major part of my life. Pre-Mosaic, I was at West Group for 3 years. So West Group, Mosaic, and then at night, I was taking what I learned from Peter Wessick, the type of thinking he had, buy when there's blood in the streets, buy in the path of progress. Those are always things that I would hear from Peter. And then sitting down with the shareholders at Mosaic over the years and hearing how they thought about real estate, saying, hey, maybe I'll avoid apartments and I'll go into townhouses. Though, as you guys like to say, the investment thesis is different now. So I know we'll get to that at some point in the show.
Right, right. Just a little bit of context, what was the day in the life as a CFO for someone like Mosaic?
And Mosaic's
like a household name in this.
Household name, but also as under your, when you were there, like it grew
a lot of growth
significantly.
Yeah, so it was pretty fun to be a part of. And what was interesting is how that role evolved over time. And so if I looked at it by the end, it would be I was responsible for IT, tax, accounting, which would include corporate, what you're used to, your financial statements, but also development accounting. So how are the projects doing? Working with the banks to submit your draw requests. Then we would also have in there capital and financial. So working with our lenders to raise money. And we would have financial planning and analysis. So looking forward and saying, where are we going over the next 3 or 4 years? What does the cash flow look like? What does that afford for acquisitions? And these are all things that you'll start to see me writing about on social media, because I've never shared this information because I was working for someone. So that didn't feel like the right thing to do. But this type of thinking for real estate to say, hey, where are we today? And when we talk about frame, you'll hear a lot of that. Where are we today? Where are we going? And how are we going to get there? Because that's the type of planning and thinking you need to do. So IT, tax, accounting, capital raising, and financial planning and analysis. Those would be the departments that I looked at. And we had 33 people on the finance team.
You know, one thing, you know, we've talked about your content creation on the show before a little bit, Clint, but like somebody who just hears that breakdown goes, that sounds A, pretty stimulating, like a stimulating environment to be in, a pretty exciting and fulfilling environment to be in. And also, you know, you have a couple kids, it's like a pretty busy environment to be in. And yet you're really keen to podcast, newsletter, and your newsletter is like, it's actually got great, like you're actually producing a very impactful newsletter, as well as being, you know, pretty prolific on social media. Like, where does that content creation kind of component, where did that come from and why?
I think it's always come from this idea of never enough. And I know where that originated from in the childhood, you know, your dad kind of never giving you that you're enough feeling. And so I learned to let that go. I learned where that came from, but I never lost that desire to always be better, always be more. And what you have, yes, super exciting role, super stimulating for a period of time. But when you've done the same thing past, let's say, 3 years, you start to feel a little like, what's next? And at that CFO role, there is no next.
Yeah.
You're at the ceiling. The only path forward from that is you're an owner in the company or you're the president, right? And there's someone in that president's seat. So that path's gone, unless you're somewhere else. And so when we ultimately get to frame, that's the rationale for eventually leaving. But while I was there, I could still feel or fill that itch by doing stuff outside of the shop. Because the amount of time, you know, I never want people to think, well, while you were delivering those things, the quality of what you were delivering at work was dropping. It's just the amount of time it takes you to deliver the same thing decreases,
right,
because you've now been doing it for,
it's more efficient.
Know, in general, finance and accounting for me has been 25 years and on the real estate finance side, 15. So the amount of time it took to deliver the same things took less. And so it was, what do I fill that up with? Some people go fill it up with, well, I picked up a hobby. I play pool or a mountain bike or I do something. For me, it was, I pick it up by learning and growing and becoming a better version of myself, which then means that I'm even better and faster at those things I was doing, which gives me more time to do those things. But I put out a tweet the other day that said, you know, the average person, 9 to 5, that's where you're doing your job for probably 3 years. It was from 5 to 9 in the morning, I was building my future. From 9 to 5, I was building for my family. I was paying to live. And then from 5 to 9 at night, again, I was building the future. During the week, I was paying the bills for the family. On the weekend, I was building for the future. So it was 7 days a week, long hours. That's how I was doing those additional things. And that was only sustainable for a period of time before it had to change. And we might have talked about that last time I was on, was at some point my wife left her job and became part of the team. And that really reduced a lot of the stress and helped me kind of get back to sleeping 6.5, 7 hours a night instead of 5.5.
Right.
Yeah.
So I want to say what's going on, because there's a lot, like a ton that's changed in your life in the last couple months. But one thing that maybe just thinking about what you said, building your future, can you talk about, because I mean, so you're at Mosaic, you've joined another venture that's kind of ground up building something, which is really exciting. But the content creation, do you see that as building your future as in like becoming a better person? Were you able to monetize that in a way that helped you through the transition? Or what does that building your future look like?
There is some monetization, not a lot, a decent amount through sponsorships, relationships with other content creators. So there is some of that. Where I see it having the most benefit is, and you guys have seen this from our past conversations, is not playing a short game. So the short game is I create some courses and I monetize those at $99 a course and sell a few hundred and I'm making a couple dollars here and there. The longer term game is, how do I pivot the audience from Clint only writes about self-development to I write about self-development, real estate, and entrepreneurship. And then what we're looking at is the same way before we jumped on air, you were saying, hey, I know this guy and he was talking about your podcast. Maybe that's someone who at some point owns land and they say, hey, I've heard you talk. I've seen your podcast. I've read your newsletter. I like your approach. Do you want to partner together on a land deal? Boom. Like they feel as part of the audience, like they already have a relationship with me. And later when we talk, for example, one of the ways I'll pay some bills early in the days is a certain amount of my time will go to fractional CFO work to bring in money for the business that I'll share with my partners. And one person I was already having a conversation with who owns and runs a development company in the city, that's a company I respect, he felt like he already knew me through LinkedIn, just by reading my content on LinkedIn. Mm. So when he and I met, we like immediately went to brass tacks. It was maybe 5 minutes of get to know you. And then it was 2 hours of like whiteboarding reorganization structures for his business on the whiteboard. Like he just felt like enough trust and enough relationship to just rip off the veil, start sharing numbers and ideas and thinking so we could get on a whiteboard and share. So that's one path. One path is access to relationships and people that could mm-hmm. eventually lead to wins for the business. Because I don't really want to have this business over here and the business for real estate, which is Frame. I want Frame to be the business and drive everything there. There might be some small things, but mainly that's the business. I don't want my partners thinking, hey, your time is being wasted over there. I want them to see that as part of the job because it's going to do, I think, three things. One is the access to the relationships that potentially lead to deals. And the other is partners. So someone who comes along and says, I've been listening to you. I see what you're doing. I understand your development business, high net worth individual. I'd love to invest in your projects. That would be the second path. And then the third path is the more people in the city that we can reach through our content and through conversations, whether it's on YouTube, LinkedIn, or Twitter, which are the three that I'm going to be focusing on, is access to people. So people, deal flow, and capital. I think those are the three ways that you can leverage that social media into how you grow the business in the long term. Mm. So it's a little slower, a little more methodical, but it's not creating the 99.99 real estate or get shit done course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about like the two times, the first time we had you on the program, we talked about FIRE and,
yes.
and specifically Fat FIRE. And the second time we had you on the show, we talked about goal planning. And when I think of you, I think of someone who has a unique ability to kind of pull back and create a path for themselves through very logical steps and get there probably a lot quicker than most people
well, could just even listen, imagine. Just listen to his explanation about why he started a podcast. That was unreal.
Yeah, it seems very, very... So I'd like to kind of dig into how you got to this spot.
For sure.
You know, today. Because, I mean, you're young. Mm-hmm. You've had a lengthy career. You're successful. Talk about Fat FIRE and like maybe how that played a role in maybe how you got here and then maybe some goal setting that kind of framed that.
Yeah, it all goes back, I'd say, to January 2018. And in the year leading up to that, I'd been having conversations with my boss about the idea of being a shareholder in the business. And the whole time we were having those conversations, I had to be thinking, what happens with me if the answer is yes? If the answer is yes, then I'm all in. And I'm very focused over the next 20, 30 years, growing the hell out of this business. I would have been, I would have been in my late 30s at the time we had that, started having those conversations. So it'd be, you know, 30 years of let's grow the heck out of this to get a return on that investment. And then on the no side is, how long can you do a job for someone else? I heard from someone a long time ago that as you start to approach 40, you start to ask yourself that question, can I work for someone else for the rest of my life? Or do I need to work for myself? And I knew the answer was, I need to work for myself. I need to go that direction. So when we ultimately had the conversation and ended up with, hey, that doesn't look like it's in the cards, I said at the time, I'll give you 10 years. And for the first two, I didn't really do anything about it. I had an idea of where I would go, but I didn't put much on paper and I didn't start laying it out. I knew it was going to be this. What I had come up with is, in 10 years, I will leave Mosaic and I will write, podcast, public speak, coach and consult, private equity and real estate investing. So, I mean, you guys probably aren't surprised that almost every item on that list is now being done. And where that started was COVID. When COVID hit, there was so much more time. So when you go back to like, where's all the time to do these things?
Right.
It was COVID. We had no more kids' activities. Weren't going into the office for work, couldn't go visit, you know, like I was going every 2 weeks to visit my parents in Mission. I love you, Mom and Dad, but the drive to Mission, spending half a day there watching TV and then driving back, like you look at that and it's yeah. like, well, I could use that half a day to build a business. And so the amount of time that got created, that's when I said, let's actually take this thinking that I had in 2018, let's put pen to paper. Let's put a plan together and let's drive to Mission 2027. Every time I went to write Mission 2027 on paper and when I saved the Excel document, I always saved it as Mission 2025. I always wrote it as Mission 2025. So even though January 2018, I said 10 years, subconsciously, I knew I wouldn't last that long. When I think about Mission 2025, we're only 6 months away from that. And so the plan and the framework that we laid out was a very detailed action plan of, for each of these categories, what's the education I need? What courses do I need to take? What do I need to launch? And then it was a systematic takedown of those things. For almost every category, whether it was a writer, whether it was a podcaster, whether it was a public speaker, even private equity and real estate investing, in every category I had this, build a brand. And so that was clear to me that if you wanted to be successful in any of those areas, you needed to build a brand. So that's what I started doing while I was still working. I realized in COVID, why would I wait until 2027, quit a job where I'm making a lot of money and go to zero? That just felt like a recipe for disaster. Why not build the off-ramp and then in 2027, take the off-ramp? So that was the shift. And that's what led us to today. In August of last year, I put out a piece on Twitter. Someone called it cringe the other day. I don't really care. I called it Mission 2040. And I said, here's my thinking about what I want to do over the next, by the time I get to 2040. And I talked about how many homes I wanted to own, how many businesses I wanted to own, and some other information around personal growth. And in August, a month later, I put it out in July. In August, I was faced with a decision, which is what led us here today. So I'll share that with you and then we can dive into it as deep as you want. I'd been accepted into a PhD program for psychology. So it was a PhD in the psychology of creativity, innovation, and leadership. So if I went that route, I would continue working at Mosaic in my role as a CFO. I would do this PhD program at night and I would create content around it, which probably would have been a recipe for depression, if you will, because the amount of time that would have taken would have been astronomical. The other was an opportunity. I started talking with someone who was starting a private equity business and a business around content creation, speaking to private equity investors while investing in those businesses, which was one of the items that I put out in Mission 2040. And I had a fortuitous lunch with an ex-colleague who was starting a real estate development shop. And so all three of those were within 1 month of putting out that piece on social media. You'll often hear me talk about the law of attraction. When I talk about the law of attraction, I capitalize the second half of the word. Action's the most important piece. I do believe, though, that when we put out into the world what we want to do and we tell people the direction we want to go, the universe generally does want to conspire to help us get there. And so that went out in July. A month later, three of the paths that I was considering were on the table.
Wow.
And which one did you take?
And also for our listeners at home, it's not 2027, right? That's the other thing is you've done everything significantly faster than you anticipated. I mean, even writing 2025, it's 2024.
Yeah. And it all comes back to, you guys have probably heard the Bill Gates quote that humanity tends to significantly overestimate what we can do in 1 year.
Right. Right.
But we dramatically underestimate what we can do in a decade. So what I've traditionally found is if you put it on paper, if you have that 10-year plan, and we've talked about this before, you take those daily actions to march towards it, it's amazing where you'll get very quickly. And so, yeah, we're well ahead of schedule. And what ended up happening was I had that conversation with a past colleague over lunch, and they let me know what they were doing. Real estate development, Vancouver Island. They let me know who their partners were, who were also both past colleagues of mine at various points in the past. So I knew all of them. And I had a good relationship with all of them. And I ended that lunch with, be very interested to continue this dialogue and see if there's an opportunity to be part of your journey. Let's keep the conversation alive. So over the next few months, we kept that conversation alive. It got to the point where I was able to put a little money into their project as an investor. And when I realized where it ultimately was going is when I resigned from my position at Mosaic as CFO, which happened in December. We had that conversation. In fairness to them, they would probably also say, hey, with the social media, with the way everything was ramping up, at some point it probably had to come to this conclusion. And over the last, where I'd say we've been over the last 6 months, in February, I converted from a full-time employee to a contractor. And I've been on a diminishing work plan over the last 3 months, which has been nice because I've been able to spend more time with family and really sleep more, which has been key. And so like March and April, I did about a 50% workload. And in May, I did a 20 to 25% workload. And as of June 1, I was a free agent. And somewhere in there, I became a partner in the business. So instead of just being an investor, now I'm a partner with these three wonderful individuals. I'll refer to as we've got the deal guy, the marketing and sales guy, and also the development guy who is also great with construction, being both a certified plumber originally who went back and became an architect. So
wow.
He's done both, which is pretty incredible as an individual.
And you're the numbers guy?
I'm the numbers guy, and then also just being able to contribute that learning and understanding and strategic thinking and direction that I've gained having 10 plus years at Mosaic, 8 at the senior leadership table. So being able to say, hey, here's some of the thinking, here's some of the planning. What if we look at it this way? And so being able to bring that to the table and what I think any one of us would love about what we're doing is, as much as I joke and say the deal guy or the marketing and sales guy or the development guy or the numbers guy, what we love about the business is we don't have to be the guy in a specific capacity. We're partners and we get to be involved in all areas of the business. So you get to, for the first time, when you look back to Matt, when you were asking earlier about, you know, stimulating. Yeah, stimulating, but you can only look at numbers for so long before you're like, hey, like, you know, I'd love to weigh in on the design of a building or the floor plan or the copywriting on the website. You know, I've spent the last 4 years improving my copywriting. It'd be nice to chime in on that. And so for the first time, when a business is small, we all wear all hats. You know, you've got your specialist in each area, but everybody contributes to help. Like even when it comes to me doing the financing, one of the guys may say, hey, what about this? What if you asked for that? And it's like, hey, that's valuable insight. Thanks. I wouldn't have thought of asking for that slight tweak in the agreement or pushing back on this clause. But that person's bringing a different lens because they may not have seen what I've seen in the role I was in.
So just so I understand, you resigned from Mosaic before you joined Frame.
Yes.
So it was kind of, you pulled the plug and you're like, all right, I'm putting this out in the universe and we'll see where the chips fall.
I had a pretty strong understanding of the direction it was going in that I wasn't fully in, but I knew that, hey, if this is where we're going.
Right.
Like if we keep marching down the path we're on, which we all seem aligned on, this is where it's going. So before we get there, I'm going to pull the chute and make sure there's a clean break from one to the other. Felt like the right thing to do at the time.
Yeah. I'm interested because earlier when we were talking, you said never enough. And that I feel like you kind of alluded to the fact that if you're lying on a couch talking to a therapist, that it probably goes back to early childhood, I'm guessing. But this idea of never enough is kind of a double-edged sword because on the one hand, it leads to productivity, but the other hand, it probably takes you away from, you know, maybe some things you could be focusing on, or there's a lot of downside as well, potentially. So how are you framing that now in your life? How are you thinking about that?
It definitely does what you said. So whenever you talk to anyone who has a bit of that mindset, and I also always look at it, I think you guys probably have some of this similar issue, is you have a certain level of, let's say, baseline intelligence and drive in the pairing of the two. Like you look at it and you have what I call that matrix mindset, where you look at the world and you say, hey, we're in a video game. There's rules, there's systems, there's processes. Now that I know those are there, let's use those to our advantage. Once you know the rules, hey, I know how real estate works. Okay. I know how I can buy real estate to make money, or I know how I can be a developer to make money. Like whatever it is, like going to the gym. Okay. We know the formula. We know if we do this, we eat this way, we'll get in shape. And so once you know the rules, you're like, okay, I'm going to use those rules to my advantage and I'm going to accumulate more. I'm going to drive more. I'm going to push myself more. Great. You achieve wonderful things. You're productive. You get shit done. Love it. You also tend to be more depressed than the average person because you can't be happy just going to work, coming home, popping a beer, watching Netflix, chilling with the wife and kids, going to bed, waking up and repeating it. Like you can't. And so you often wonder which one of those is actually the better path. Because if you could just be super content, like I love life and I'm super happy with where I am and what I'm doing, maybe that's better than always saying I can be better.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're always saying I can be better, you're also telling yourself I'm not good enough, right?
Yeah.
So there's that fine line. So what I think happens over time when you do that deeper work is you start to say to yourself, and I say this to my kids, and it's one of my favorite quotes from a Buddhism master when he said to his students, you're perfect as you are, and you can be better. So it's changing the lens to saying, I can be more because I'm not good enough, to I am good enough today. And I can be happy and I can meditate on that. And I can be with my kids and I can enjoy the present moment. And then I can put a plan together to still be better. And I think that's the subtle shift that I've had over the last 5 years, is the first probably 40 years of my life were pushing because of that relationship with my dad, because of that, hey, I never felt like enough based on the way we had our conversations when I was a kid. But the last 5 years were, no, I'm enough and I'm happy and I'm content and I've got a good life and I want more because I enjoy. When you do that for 40 years, you start to enjoy the drive and you start to enjoy the pursuit and you start to enjoy the challenge in achieving things. But looking at it from that subtly different lens.
When you think about financial, like FIRE, so financial freedom, or financial independence, retire early, right? That seems to drive a lot of people, like this idea of freedom. But like, what is your why now? Because I mean, you're in a different situation than you were in even last time you were on the show, which was not long ago.
Yeah, I've wrote about this one a couple times. And part of it's driven by guys like Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, who just passed away last year. I think he was 99.
Yeah.
And I look at it and say, so too many people. When we were talking earlier off air and you talked about that person who's 65 and they retire and they can't do anything anymore, or they pass away within 2.5 years of retiring. Like there's some crazy stats on how soon after retiring a lot of people die. And you see these guys like Warren and Charlie who are going into work still in their 80s and their 90s. Now they might not be going in 5 days a week for 10 hours a day, but they're going in. And part of that is the community. They're going in because the people in the office are their friends. They're people they like to spend time around. And they like the intellectual rigor of being in the office. So I look at it and say, what do I want? I want to build a business with partners where when we hit a certain age, maybe I'm not driving as hard as I was in my 40s or my 50s even, but I'm still coming in because they're my friends and I'm coming in to shoot the shit and to add value to the younger people.
Yeah, you're actually enjoying being there.
You're enjoying being there.
Yeah.
And you know, I forget the name of the person in our industry and people used him as an example. Like he had a table in a specific restaurant.
Oh yeah.
At that table every day, mm-hmm. You know, and it's like that mentor mentee thing. So young people in the industry are having lunch with you and you're sharing your knowledge, you're sharing your experience. And then you're like, there's my half day. I shot the shit with my friends. I added value in the company. I mentored some people. Now I'm going to go be with my family and I'm going to take more vacation and I'm going to build in a way that allows and affords that different second or third half, third quarter, trimester, whatever we have of life and work with people who you're saying, hey, like I'm 6 years older than you or I'm 10 years older than you. Like I'm showing you what your path could be as you approach these ages. I'm not simply going from working full-time in the business to zero, as I've heard someone say in the past, it's just working differently. So you're still adding value, you're still contributing, but in a different way. More of a, like a, let's call it, but by the time you get there, this is 20 years from now, like a more of a chairperson role than an in-the-business role.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that you mentioned off-air that we didn't talk about was you sold your house.
Yeah.
Now, I remember you and Adam both crying at a certain point in a past episode.
Co-cry.
You guys, you had a very, it was a very, but it was a very meaningful bonding moment for both of you who built houses.
We built houses around the same time.
And I think.
And in COVID, when did you start?
I got lucky. I moved in.
I feel like we've done this
January
before.
January 2020. So I moved in
3 months December 2019.
Yeah, you guys literally, it was the exact same. And wasn't yours was like the heritage
component, lifting the house.
And yours was the bog.
Mine was the bog.
And it was like, but it was the same, like this is such a bigger
project.
But
they were both characterized by overtures and delays.
Yeah. 50% over budget, 50% over time.
And some tears.
But you sold your house.
Yeah, we sold. So
you resigned. You sold your house. Why'd you sell your house?
I did all these things in the wrong order, by the way. So I'll share that part. Yeah. My wife hated me for 4 or 5 months. So if you think about it, what should you do? You should sell your house, buy the new place, get the mortgage, quit your job. I quit my job. Sorry, no. I bought the new place, quit my job, and then for a few months did nothing. And we realized when we started talking
to get a mortgage.
Brokers, like Kyle. So Kyle's helped us. Kyle Green, Green Mortgage Company, who's been on the show a lot. Kyle has helped us on about 4 or 5 deals in the past after I heard him on the show. So he was working behind the scenes. He had a couple options lined up, but he's like, oh boy, this is going to be hard, guys. And I was like, oh Jesus, what have I done? And then he was working on that. We were working with the person that had the mortgage to say, hey, can we port this? Even though I don't have a job at the moment, can we lend against net worth? That's effectively what we were seeking to do. And we expected if we sold the house, knock on wood, that we would have a significant down payment.
Right.
And the whole point of this is we don't necessarily have needed to do it, But you, like, you guys have nailed it. Like, I'm a bit, as much as my wife doesn't think so, a bit of a planner.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's, if I'm starting this business, I'm leaving a high paying job. Why don't we take some significant debt off the table, lower our monthly burn? And that way we can have some time to build up. And I don't have to be building the business in a way where I'm running scared. Right? Like, oh, how am I going to feed the family? How am I going to pay the mortgage? I can build from a position of strength. So I knew we needed to sell. What we did, I think we effectively did a bit of a sold on launch day plan. I didn't necessarily download the PDF.
I've heard, the sold plan.
I've heard enough of the show to recognize what we needed to do.
Easy download on our site, by the way. But yeah, go ahead,
CooperRealEstatePodcast.com.
You should download and you should listen to the episodes about what you need to do to sell your house for top dollar. My wife like gutted the place with, you know, 30 bags of like donations to declutter, brought in the handyman to
take care of all the deficiencies,
tune it all up, and then power wash the crap out of every single surface we could, and then started the showings in, I want to say, April. And a couple weeks later, two interested parties. So got to, you know, do the age old, use the two of them against each other, and were able to sell for a pretty substantial amount in the Mount Pleasant area, which I thought was a record till I found out a week later it wasn't, which upset me. And so now that's done. And then we're going to move into a project that's under development and construction right now in the King Edward and Columbia area. So that's pretty much center ice in the city, right?
Yeah.
King Ed and Columbia, or King Ed and Cambie, I think, is kind of right in the middle.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we're just two blocks off of that. So it'll be pretty good for the boys for school.
It's amazing. So you're downsizing?
Yeah. So we're going from single family house in Mount Pleasant, which was 3,200 less the basement suite. So we probably had 2,600 square feet.
Perfect size.
And we'll be, including the little storage space, we'll be about 1,950 square feet in the new place.
Wow.
Yeah.
So not a huge drop.
Not a huge drop. I think.
Also, your kids are...
They're older. They're 16 and 13.
I was gonna say,
this month.
I think I looked at your house, the listing, and they're going to miss that basketball court in the back.
Yeah, they're going to miss the
basketball court. But you'll probably miss that.
I'll miss it a little, but I think what I'll miss, because what we lose is, we lose like the boys' TV room, which is nice because then you have a separate spot for them. And then we lose my office in the backyard. So I had an office, which is where I hosted the podcast. I had an infrared sauna in there and a gym. So it was kind of like the perfect man cave.
No kidding.
So I lose that.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
Clint, a lot of people that have listened to you on the past two episodes, they'll see kind of the through line and they'll see the trajectory that you've been on. But people that are just tuning in and hearing you for the first time, one thing I'm noticing is one consistent thing that's been through all your planning throughout your whole entire life has been real estate.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of been the through line in many ways, right? There's been a lot of planning, but it's always had a spot in some capacity and actually almost across the board and in most capacities. Can you talk about real estate investing and the role that that's played in getting you to where you are today? And then we'd like to maybe unpack some of the real estate investing that you hope to do in the future, where you see the opportunity.
Or even, learn more.
We'll definitely get there.
Yeah. We'll talk about your imaginary niece as well.
Yeah. So when we look at real estate, it's been definitely a blessing for us in that we've invested in last, I'd say, 12 years. We've managed to accumulate a fair amount of real estate, 5 townhouses in the valley, 1 apartment in the city, 1 apartment that's under construction in Port Moody, cottage in Osoyoos, and our single family home that had a rental suite. So we've done a fairly good job of accumulating a certain amount of real estate. The positive to that has been the contribution to our net worth, because you're both in Vancouver. You both see what's happened over that 12 years. We've had a couple bull runs in that period. So it's contributed significantly to our net worth. It hasn't contributed as significantly to cash flow, especially with the interest rate climb over the last year and a half. Sure. So, you know, I joke online because people on Twitter always like to say what they're, you know, like, my revenue from my income portfolio is $200,000. So I throw out a tweet that says the revenue from my income portfolio is $240,000. It's still negative cash flow, but it's somewhere around there. So you know, that probably contributes pretty flat cash flow, but that's building for the future. So in 20 years, when the debt's zero, then that'll be a pretty meaningful contribution to the pension. In the interim, it's created a substantial amount of net worth that I'm able to leverage into a few things. I'm able to leverage to be able to afford our home purchase without having to underwrite my employment income, as an example. More importantly, I'm able to leverage it into investment in my development business with my partners. So to be able to put money into projects as a partner in those projects. And it also affords that safety net in the future, right? So if my kids can't afford a home when they hit a certain age, well, hey, maybe you move into the home in Cloverdale. Like, I don't know if they'll be up for that, but it gives a path to their future.
And what about, I mean, you mentioned today's environment. We just had a rate decrease of a quarter point. So we're still in pretty high interest rate environment territory. It's notable that you guys are building on the island. So you're moving forward with projects. But what about from a real estate investing standpoint? Like is now, like you did talk, say, mentioned Peter Wessick, Blood in the Streets, In the Path of Progress. Is today an environment in which you would consider, if you weren't doing the investing on the island, real estate investing here in the Lower Mainland?
Yeah, it's interesting. I absolutely 100% would. And it works for starting the development business. So when you look at some of the successful development companies today, a lot of them came out of former recessions. So whether that was the 90s and things weren't great and Mosaic started in the early 2000s, and then the market went on a bit of a tear. You never want to be that group that's starting right after a 40% run up in the market. Mm-hmm. Because now you're buying at the highs.
And you see those guys, they bought at the highs.
They bought at the highs.
Yeah, they're getting crushed.
Unfortunately, we've seen a few of them in the last 6 months go out of business, and you start to receive those calls from brokers about distressed assets. We were talking to one broker on the island as an example, and his comment was, over the last 2 years that some of my partners were in this business before I joined with them, there were deals he put in front of them that they didn't take because they didn't pencil. He mentioned one group that came to the island. They toured a bunch of sites with them. They bought 3 sites that day. All 3 of those are now being listed, are now in distress because they bought at the high thinking it can only keep going up. So I think from both aspects, starting a real estate development company today and investing in that, I feel like it's a good time in the market today to do that. And if I were an investor or I was talking to my young 21-year-old niece who just finished college and I was saying where she would buy, I would like to think now would be a good time to, for her to invest. Two different areas I would focus on those. For me, development, we like the island for a number of reasons, and we can talk about that mm-hmm. next. But if we go with the niece, why I like, and you guys have said it on the show before, and I think you're exactly right, is I've talked in the past about this concept I have of looking, you have apartments and you've got bands. So you've got apartments, those hit a certain price point, they hit townhomes, those can only go up so much before they hit single family homes. And then you have geographic circles, and historically the center has, and you guys have been talking about this a lot mm-hmm. lately, actually, historically the center has been downtown, and then you've had the concentric rings going out. You have Brentwood and you have Metrotown in that second ring. Then you have the Tri-Cities. Then we have the Valley. What's been crazy is the gap between Brentwood and downtown mm-hmm. is practically zero. It's
non-existent, right? Yeah.
And so what that's telling you is the general public is pricing out the downtown, the city will not come back from COVID, will not come back from the crime and the drugs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. When you look throughout history, almost any major city that had some sort of major disaster, or it had a plague or whatever the reason was, the fire in London, it always came back. So where would I invest? I would be investing downtown. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have all my money tied up going into the business, or if I was advising my niece, ideally, I've heard that you can, I haven't checked this myself, but certain older townhouse stock downtown trading for around $1,000 a foot. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
That's insane. Like, could you imagine?
You can get actually like the deals. I've been monitoring downtown a lot. And the deals, I think like some of the buildings, some of the one beds that you can get in like really choice buildings at really, really good prices. Like I think there's no better buy.
Yeah.
Like there's no better buy. The only thing that sits in the back of my mind is we're like year seven of like that market being generally pretty flat downtown.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking like how long every year. It's like waiting for the interest rate to be cut. But it's like every year I'm like, okay, this is the year it's going to happen. And downtown just...
Don't you feel like downtown was coming back in at the end of 2019?
It totally was.
I feel
was.
Like it was
right
like...
Before there was, COVID.
Yeah.
Right before COVID.
And then COVID kind of stomped it. Yeah. So, but the other thing is you own five places in the Valley, but you bought those but when bought downtown those, was
I bought
hot.
Those when downtown was hot
yeah.
and no one wanted the Valley.
Yeah.
And what I did was I said, I looked at the rings and said, townhouses in the Valley are cheap.
Are really cheap.
Like
yeah.
really cheap. Massive space. And I kept hearing land guys say, there's no more land to build townhouses. There's no more land. And you've heard people on yeah. the show talk about, well, why are you doing so much wood frame apartment? Well, there's less townhouse land. There's less land that we can build out. We've got to go up. We've got to go up. So you're seeing shops. You're even seeing, you know, using Mosaic as an example, beautiful concrete product in Coquitlam, right?
Yeah.
Port Coquitlam right on the Coquitlam border with Town and Center. Just a wonderfully beautiful product. But even Mosaic, who's traditionally been known as the best townhouse builder in the city,
yeah.
went to wood frame next, like a larger and larger portion of the portfolio and now concrete. Because Vancouver's a city where you start to have to go up. So I just kept filing that away. And it just screamed, well, why don't I buy a bunch of these while they're cheap? In an area that's cheap mm-hmm. and got lucky with COVID and everybody deciding to move out to the Valley. And what was interesting was 2 years later when the townhouse market was going up, I was still hearing people come on the show saying like, oh, I would buy townhouses in the Valley. And I was thinking, well, that's you're 2 years too late. Like now you should be,
yeah.
now the playbook switched. You should be buying apartments or townhouses in the city. Because there aren't going to be that many. There's going to be very few townhouses built, right? When you look at the densification, it's almost all going to be wood frame apartments or concrete. Mm-hmm. I think even the only reason we got the townhouse project we did was if you drive by this site, you guys will recognize it. It's two phases of townhouse project. And in the middle of it is a guy who didn't want to sell their single family home.
Oh yeah.
With the palm trees. So if that guy sold his home, for sure that's a six-story wood frame building.
Yeah.
It's right across the street from Mosaic's six-story wood frame building,
yeah,
which I love, Edward. So there's no way they do a townhouse project if that guy, I think, I could be wrong, if that guy sells his house.
So you still really believe in the townhouse product?
I believe in it from a family perspective because I think less and less people are going to be able to afford single family homes. Mm-hmm. And single family homes are going by the wayside in the city. We're never adding another single family home
you're
in the city.
You're penalized.
Right? You're penalized. So, and you're not adding. If anything, you're just replacing. But you're replacing with a smaller one. So I look at that and say, well, if all the single family is going away, what's the next opportunity for that?
Yeah, the closest
four-person family.
And then townhomes.
Right? Half duplexes.
And it's still tough. Like the townhome projects, presumably, just with the value of land is like, does it make sense, especially if they're zoned for hire? It's like, when are we going to add that many townhomes?
And if half duplexes get replaced by multiplexes... And multiplexes, I'm still yet to see. I got to spend more time with some of the designs because I hear there's some pretty good designs out there. But when I think about half duplexes, how livable, especially side by side on like a 50-foot lot or whatever. But there's some really beautifully designed half duplexes. So,
and the price of those as well. 5 years ago, that could have been a single family home.
Oh.
You just look at the price people are paying for. Like I look at the price I paid for that townhouse and I'm... If you told me 20 years ago I would have a house at that price, I'd think you're crazy. Like,
right.
A, I'd never think I would have been successful enough to get there. And B, I just can't mathematically comprehend that I would pay that much money for a townhouse. Well, I can now because we're in the industry, but 20 years ago I would have thought,
yeah,
you're crazy. No one would ever pay that for a townhouse.
Why the island?
Why the island? So I like to, one of my partners will get mad at me for saying it, but we like to look at it. It's the land of milk and honey. Like it's beautiful. The moment you get there, you feel calmer. And it's more than that. You feel like you did in Vancouver in, I'd say, 06 to 09.
Well, I like that Vancouver.
You know, like you know you're onto something that everybody else isn't yet. Like you're there. Like last year or earlier this year, Victoria was voted the number one small city in the world. You remember when Vancouver went on that streak of the number one city in the world for like, and then all of a sudden it wasn't affordable. And we started to lose points for affordability. And that drove us down the ladder. We're still top 10, but we don't hit that number one spot anymore. And so it feels like Victoria, with its combination of affordability and the livability, like you guys grew up in the Peg, right? If I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yeah.
So I grew up in Mission, which, you know, so we could probably arguably. Relate. It might be worse. Sorry for Missioners. I love it. They'll never invite me back to talk at the high school.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought maybe that was in the cards someday. So I grew up there, small town, you know, moved to the city, like it. I love Mount Pleasant walking, but it's still a little busy. And you go to Victoria and you go downtown Victoria, you got a really nice core, a really nice, vibrant community. And then you go like 5 minutes east, 5 minutes west, and it's just calm. And it's quiet and it's relaxing and you're by the water. And I've always loved this idea. I've always had it on my goal list. And you guys know me with goal lists. Like I've always wanted to own real estate on water. And so I think if I look at my path with the company is as we scale, which is the goal, as we scale the business up, my time there will scale up. So at first, you know, one project, kids still in high school, I'll be going over every couple weeks for a few days. Spending that time, you know, stay in a hotel and stay there for a night or two and then come home on the ferry. By the time we have four or five projects on the go, that becomes every week.
Right.
5 years from now, when my boys are both graduated high school, that becomes probably I'm there during the week. I'm home with the wife on the weekends. And so I expect my time on the island will scale with the business and to the point down the road when I'm planning on being able to get a mortgage this time, when I can when I can have that home on the island and in Vancouver.
I feel like there's a 2037 plan here. Eh?
I was going to say, so the two things,
2030.
The one thing that I was thinking is, and I know we never talked about Mosaic when you were there. We kind of had this before we went live, like bring you back to talk about the business and how it's going and what the challenges are, and kind of have a reoccurring conversation about like growing a development business from four people to, knowing Clint, 40 very soon, and who knows from there. But are you able to share kind of the, you know, that 10-year, the 2040 plan?
For sure. Yeah. The goal is by 2030 to be able to be in that 150 to 200 million in revenue per year. And so if you're doing that, you're looking at, you know, if it was all townhomes, you're probably doing 200 townhomes a year, because you're delivering at about $1 million a townhome today. If you're doing apartments, it's going to be more units. So you're going to be in that 300 to 400 homes a year that you're delivering to generate that revenue. So that's the target by 2030. It might be somewhere in between 2030 and 2034. So as you said, the 10-year plan. And the goal on that scaling is, you know, one project going to sales now and should be pulling building permit within the next 2 weeks, knock on wood. We're submitting a development permit for another project this week. Every week, we're writing paper on potential sites. And the idea being, you know, what I love about Mosaic and what I want to keep in my DNA for the rest of my life, because the way I plan my life, the way I plan my goals, the way I set these 10-year visions, that's what we do as a company, is to say, what is the future? Where do we want to be? What's the plan to get there? What are we going to do this year so that in 5 years, we're where we want to be? And in 10 years, we're at these, what people thought was audacious, but we had it on paper and now we're there. And so what does that look like? It looks like you write a certain amount of offers per week. I think we wrote down, you know, you're looking at a few hundred, you're getting a few hundred deals in the pipe a week. You're turning that into 80 deals that you do a pro forma on. You're turning that into 20 deals that you write an LOI on. That becomes 5 deals that you get under contract. That becomes 2 deals that you ultimately get through DD and close on. Something crazy like that, right? Where okay, that's how many deals you have to work on the brokers on getting across your desk every week, so that we can write that many deals, so that we can end up with that many in the pipe. And if we keep doing that every week, we're going to get the number of sites in the future that we want. Now, you have to do that, of course, risk respectfully. What does that look like? It means we're not forward-looking and saying revenues are going to be up 10% a year.
Sure.
We're writing today's revenues, today's
costs. Actually, this goes back, you know, to the, like, coming out of a recession. It's like there's no rose-colored glasses right now. Nobody
100%,
has them.
Yeah, nobody 100%. Has them. We're not forecasting the rates dropping. We're saying today's interest rates, today's costs, today's revenues. And if we can make the site work under that condition, then the second thing we want to do is say, let's buy some time. And when you buy some time, you do a couple of things. So what I mean by that is we don't want to close on that dirt until we get our building permit. So we want to work with the landowner to put some steps along the way, like a due diligence step, a rezoning step, and deposits go up along the way. And part of what you're able to say to that landowner is, hey, look, like interest rates today are 8%. I can give you this price fast, or I can give you this price if you give me the time.
Right.
And you're giving them more of the benefit, maybe not all, of the benefit of the interest savings that you have over that time frame. And most of the people, when we're at the scale we are, we're not talking about these big brownfield sites that have nothing on them. We're talking, you know, Ted or Tina, who own 3 homes beside each other, and we're going to turn that into 20 townhomes. Mm-hmm. That's the type of size and scale. And if you're listening and you have 4 homes or 5 homes, we want to talk to you too. We're willing to scale up for that. And that's a bit of the goal is we start at something we can chew on. So the first site we have is 15 townhomes. The second site will be 19. The goal would be the next two would be in that 25 to 30 range. And then after we do that, we should have demonstrated a bit enough of the track record with our investors, with the bankers, et cetera. And then you look at it and say, hey, let's target a minimum of 35 to 40 townhomes thereafter. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at about $40 million in revenue. Because for the people who are listening, the big thing is you're not making money when you first start your development business, right? Because you're buying the land and you're not closing on it, as in closing sales for people moving in for 4 years. So you're putting up cash, you're running the cash up, you're bringing your investors in. 2 years later, you close on the dirt, or you close on the dirt early. Let's say we do get the 2 years, you close on the dirt. Now you're getting to construction start. You got to put even more money in, and then you're not getting your money out with hopefully a return. Mm-hmm. You're generally not underwriting a big return. I know everyone thinks greedy developers, yeah, but you're actually underwriting only roughly a 10 to 15% margin on your some group's revenue, some group's cost. And you're waiting 4 years to get that. So what do you do in the interim is you have some fee revenue from those projects, but the smaller your project is, the less the fee revenue is. So if you're going to take 4 years to do the work, and I'll credit my friend Valadia from Density, who would be a great person for you guys to talk to at some point, who brought this up at lunch, was he realized very early in Density's life cycle that you need to do a project that has sufficient scale to deliver those fees that keep you with the lights on over that 4 year build process. Mm. So that's where you kind of say, hey, in that 35 to 40 million, we're generating enough fees. And in the interim, while we wait for some of these projects to close, then we've got to figure out as a team, what are other ways that we can, you know, feed the family? Like, mm-hmm, what are we going to be doing to keep the lights on and keep people fed? So that's part of the conversation with the group as well.
It's a lot. Yeah. Maybe as a final question, I just thought of thinking about the market in general right now. A lot of people calling this week going, did the quarter point cut change the amount of activity? And, you know, I think the verdict still seems to be out a bit, maybe seem tiny uptick this week, but a lot of people thinking,
it's hard to say,
it might take a few cuts before we actually start to see more momentum in the market. What are your thoughts on the market for the balance of the year and for 2025?
Ooh, this is always fun. So they always picked on me at Mosaic because we would always have twice a year, we would look out 2 years and say, what do you think is going to happen with prices in 2 years? And I was always the most optimistic by a long shot. And they were like, you're just crazy. You just throw out a number. And I think for the last five in a row, I was right, because if you go back 4 years and you'd said, we're going to be up 20%, you'd have been right every time, right? You'd have actually been light. So when I look out 2 years, I would give you a very optimistic answer. I always give a who knows over the next 6 months. The shorter the time frame, the less certain I am in an increase. The longer the time frame we go, the more comfortable I am that we're going to see a significant uptick in pricing in Vancouver and Vancouver Island real estate. And the reason I say that is you look at starts, you look at pre-sales, and you look at the amount of projects that are coming and the volumes, and it feels like, and I believe the numbers bear out, that the activity from the developer side has been declining. And so I don't know about you guys, but I don't see less demand. I don't see less people wanting to move to the city. I haven't heard them saying they're cutting off immigration yet. So when you look at it and you keep the demand there, but you drop the supply, it's happened, I think, four times in the last 20 years. We've had the same result every time. The mm-hmm. last time it happened was 2018, 2019, when they threw in, I think it was something like 18 to 20 different taxes, rules to attack demand, right? Everyone was still saying this was a demand issue, not a supply issue.
Right.
And what happened was once COVID came and everyone got a little over that, we went on a tear. Mm-hmm. So that got resolved. And now we've had about 2 years of lowering supplies. So I believe strongly that we will have a very strong 2025 in terms of price appreciation. Over the next 6 months, I don't expect much. I only expect maybe one more rate cut. And then unless something significant happens, a modulated drop in rates through 2025. And as they drop, I expect that the demand is going to come back hard. There will not be the supply to fill it.
Okay, Clint, we lost Matt, but you are still here. Five Wire, let's go.
Let's do it.
One book that you would recommend for our listeners that you've read recently?
You know, just based on the conversation we had before we jumped on air, I'd have to say Die with Zero. Really practical takeaways, good conversation. And there's going to be two or three nuggets that everybody takes away for their life. Memory dividends, time buckets. Definitely think people will love that.
And a good plug for your show. You just had the author of Die with Zero on the show not long ago.
Yeah, it was in good conversation.
Excellent. Question number two. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
I don't know if I said this last time I was on. I would say 2 years ago. I can't remember if it was two or three. I think it was two. I quit drinking. Absolutely biggest impact I've ever had on my life, for sure.
Wow. And is it the sleep? Is it the time? Is it what?
It's every one of those. So yeah. The way I like to describe it is simply, even if you're only going to have one or two beer, as soon as you crack the lid, the rest of that night, you're not working. You're not getting much done. You're a bit foggy. And even, like you said, with sleep, even if you only have one or two drinks, the sleep's not as good. And you wake up foggy the next day. So now you've taken out that night, you've taken out the sleep, and you've taken out the next morning. And so when I look at the last 2 years, they've been the most productive years of my adult life. And so I would say I've moved forward mentally, physically, financially, emotionally. Like, it's just, part of it is I'm never off. You know what I mean? Like, yep. Like you're always switched on and you're never cloudy. That cloudiness that comes with the, I'll call it the break that alcohol may give you. And I just realized as soon as I, you know, my wife said, why don't you try it for a period of time? And after trying it for a period of time, I realized, why would I go back?
Yeah.
Why would I go back? And so I think this one's permanent.
Melissa on our team calls alcohol the biggest scam because it's you trade like 4 hours of fun for, you know, call it almost 24 hours or whatever with sleep or 12 hours or whatever. Yep. Of, you know, feeling like garbage. Yeah, no, that's a great one. Question number three, what have you been binge watching lately or a movie recommendation?
So I mentioned earlier that I have to get out of the house and get into a co-working space because the amount of binge watching I've been doing is insane. I have it on in the background while I work. The number one is, have you seen Mayor of Kingstown? It's just phenomenal. And it's with Jeremy Renner, who had that unfortunate accident where he got run over by the snowblower.
Oh, yeah.
So there was a bit of a big gap between season two and three, but we're back. Season three just came on and this show. Did you ever watch The Wire back in the day?
Yeah.
So that was one of the first times where you had someone who had like good guys are bad and bad guys are good. Like there's a guy who plays a crack dealer in Mayor of Kingstown. His name's Bunny. He's this giant guy. He's part of the Crips gang, runs it. And you love the guy. And you almost think to yourself, like, this guy's too soft to be running this gang. And then he does something while he's in prison. And you're like, nope, this all makes sense. This all makes sense. So, but it's this juxtaposition of good people do bad things and bad people do good things. And it's gritty. Right. So I haven't seen that since The Wire. Maybe Game of Thrones. Yeah. I think had some of that, which is why people loved it. So this is the first time I've seen something like that in years.
Wow, that's good. Is that Netflix?
I think I'm watching it on Prime.
Prime.
Yeah.
Question number four, favorite band or music lately?
Yeah, I knew this was coming. So it's a combo. Every time I get in the vehicle, I do a three-act combo. I put on a little Tipsy by Shaboozey, which is just like—
I just heard about this song.
Just like— just like gets you going. My son told me about it before it was big. I thought it was old. Turns out it's like new, but it's just like, it's energy. Listen to it.
Well, who's the artist? Shaboozey?
Shaboozey is the artist and the song is called Tipsy. And it's just pure energy, like the feel of it. And then there's a song I heard by a guy called Dax and it's To Be a Man. And it's like, as a father, as a man, like it's a really sad song.
Country?
He's got a bit of a country flavor. And he does one version where he brings on a country artist who does it with him. And then he's got another 10-minute version where during the verses, it's all different artists. And they're singing like it's about the challenges and the downsides of being a man. You know, like
right.
You're expected to behave this way. You can't share your feelings. You can't cry. You can't show your emotion. Like,
right.
This is why we commit suicide. So it's like really sad and emotional. And I'm like I almost, the first few times I heard it, would get teary. So I play those two. And then I jump straight to Zach Bryan. And then he's just on repeat.
He's just on repeat. Sounds like Matt's playlist. Last but not least, something that you've purchased for under $1,500. Let's increase that, maybe $2,500, that's had a positive impact on your life.
I'd say this was yesterday. I joined 4 or 5 months ago the new gym that's just down the street here.
Altea,
that's right. And so I joined them. I got the Diamond membership so I could do the morning boot camp style classes with a teacher. Phenomenal. And yesterday I signed my oldest son up. So I believe your kids are a fair bit younger than mine.
2 and 4.
Two and four. So they always tell you it goes fast. And you're like, yeah, sure. He turns 16 in 2 weeks. So I only have 2 years left with him before he's out of the house off to college. And I look at it and I was like, well, how do I get more time with him to make up for the time that I missed when he was young? And I was so focused on work and career. And I thought, if I get him a gym membership, we'll go together 3 or 4 days a week before class, get a workout in, have a sauna, pick his brother up, drop them off at school. And then when he goes off to college, I'll transfer his membership to his younger brother and I'll have 3 years at the gym with him.
Nice.
So that's my investment I made. And I think it's going to be pay the most dividends I've
ever
seen.
And they have like steam and sauna. They've got a nice
steam room, nice sauna. It's a good mix.
I'm tempted. It's like a 3-minute walk from here.
Yeah. It's a good spot.
Amazing. Well, Clint, how can people find out more about what you're up to? Maybe the podcast, your newsletter, also, of course, what's happening at Frame.
Sure. They can find me. You'll be able to tell. I like names where we can have everything right in the URL. So they can find everything me at thegrowth.guide. And then they can find everything real estate at frame.properties. So frame.properties. And I think what I'll do is put a link to Frame in my website as well. So that people can find it all in one spot.
I'm already looking forward to episode 4 coming up soon. Thanks so much for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with partner over at Frame, Clint Murphy.
I always like having Clint on the program. You know, I read Clint's newsletter The Growth Guide. And the one thing about that is I feel like him and I and yourself, but similar stages in life in terms of like having kids, living in the same area, very close to the same neighborhood, kind of similar ideals in a lot of way.
Yeah. Always striving.
Maybe not at the same pace as Clint.
No.
But
definitely not.
But you know what? When you read his emails, they really resonate with you. And I had a good friend of the show, John, reach out about one of his emails that led him to a podcast and actually around the book that we talked about, which was Die with Zero, I think is the title of the book. And huge impact on John. I feel like what Clint's stuff does is it kind of... it's a bit of a zeitgeist in those emails, right?
A bit of a zeitgeist, especially if you're... Well, no, because you know what? He does two things. One is if you're in your 40s, it's kind of inspiring and like, okay, am I on the right path? Sort of resets, right? When you're reading it. The other thing is, and he does this on Twitter as well and social media, is he's saying, okay, here's what I'd do if I was 10 years younger or 15 years younger. Sure. Or if I was 25, here's how I'd approach things. So it kind of encapsulates... the wisdom that he's achieved, and also a good thing for, you know, schlubs in their 40s as well. So,
yeah.
And presumably even older.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I kind of wish, I wish I had a growth guide when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah, me too. What else do we have before we cut for the day? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where you can find things like the Livewire. This is our weekly mailer where you get the real estate board stats, different types of stats, sales ratios. You can see how things are selling in a certain price band, in a certain neighborhood. You get deal of the month. You get VIP access to pre-sales. There's basically no reason why you don't want to be on the Livewire. We also have, of course, tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. There's no reason that you shouldn't have a PCS account right now.
It's an interest. We say this all the time, but I mean, maybe, you know, we're real estate obsessed, but it does feel like a very interesting moment to chart inventory and what's selling and
what's selling.
And it gives you what price.
It gives you a clear line on the absorption rate in your immediate area.
Days on market.
It's so good.
Yeah. And they're adding all sorts of graphs and different data points. It's a fantastic.
And, you know, we've already said it, but sign up for the growth guide. Clint Murphy's, yeah. I was trying to think of what your growth guide would have been. Mad Magazine?
Yeah, exactly.
Was it
me worry?
Was it
what me worry? Yeah. That's what I said until I was 35, and then I really started worrying.
I was 27 years old, just doing the fold in thing, trying to line up the fold in. Where the heck was the growth guide? Matt, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they reach out?
They can try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line that is actually how I believe we first got in touch with Clint.
Yeah. Clint lives that Kokomo life. And I feel, you know, we were texting over Instagram, Clint and I, where he was like in basically, I think he was on like a paddleboard somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Or maybe
he referenced the Kokomo life, right?
He mentioned the Kokomo life, which is awesome.
And then it led to a flourishing podcast reoccurrence.
Yes, absolutely.
So
anyway, we're better for it. I'm not so sure about Clint, but
we are, that's for sure. And this brings me back to the Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, and we're back next week with another fantastic show. Take care.
2000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.